Good afternoon and welcome to a Juno Afternoon for this Tuesday, July 28th, 2015. This is your host, Katie Bosler. In the beginning of the program, we'll talk with Joyce Vick about Toastmasters. Mac Metcalf will be here to highlight Thursday's Alaska National Guard Reunion Day with Duff Mitchell and Bruce Gathaway. And Kelly Barkov and Sharon Lobaugh will be here to talk about their show of art at the Rookery. We'll get an update on programming on 360 North with Kelly Birkinshaw. That, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, music and more today on a Juno Afternoon. And it looks like we have numerous showers in the forecast with the highs around 58. Here's National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A recent federal study named 2040 as the date for the potential end of Alaskan shellfish hatcheries unless efforts are put in place to combat ocean acidification. Monday, we reported on research at the Aleutic Pride Shellfish Hatchery in Seward, Alaska. Today, KBBI's Shady Grove Oliver takes a look at what's being done at a hatchery in the Pacific Northwest.
The Whiskey Creek Shellfish Hatchery is located in the small town of Tillamook, Oregon. It's been producing shellfish commercially since it started in 1978.
Then all of a sudden, you know, in about 2006, we started seeing some pretty major problems. And then from, like, the end of 2007 all through 2008, we couldn't produce larvae anymore.
Sue Cudd owns the hatchery. For a year and a half, they tried to produce and failed. Because they'd never collected baseline data on the ocean water they pumped into their tanks, they couldn't initially figure out what was wrong.
We didn't know why we couldn't produce larvae because we really never knew why we could. Because we just never needed to, they grew.
So they hired an oceanographer and discovered they often had very acidic water. Wiley Evans led the Alaska study and says the industry has learned from the problems at Whiskey Creek.
The shellfish aquaculture industry in Alaska is very young. And so right now there's one shellfish hatchery, and we're making measurements in that hatchery. And so we wanted to set a baseline that could be something that the industry uses as a guideline for moving forward in the future.
To cope, Cudd says Whiskey Creek now buffers its water with injections of sodium carbonate. The carbonate helps organisms like clams and mussels develop their shells, which they otherwise couldn't do.
It's weird to think that, you know, 10 years ago we were running this hatchery with no treatment, and now we don't ever run with no treatment.
Aleutic Pride is now considering that as an option for the future. In Homer, I'm Shady Grove Oliver.
Traditional Native game clinics are helping teach games and skills to people across the country. Daniel Rosinski Larson recently attended one in Montana and has this report.
In the village of East Glacier Park on the Blackfeet Reservation, four teams of men, women, teenagers, and young children play a traditional game of lacrosse. The women and children are winning against the men. This is community lacrosse. It's one of 60 traditional games taught by the International Traditional Games Society, which has run clinics to teach and make pieces for Native American games since 1997. Jeremy Red Eagle, a member of the Sisseton Wahpeton Sioux tribe, has been coming to these events for the past 8 years.
So a long time ago amongst the Dakota, when we played lacrosse, if they played man against woman, they would double the women team against the men. And it created that balance with it. And that game, one of the big values that you get out of that is humility, because every time we've ever played it, the men have never won because of the rules that are put in there to create that balance. So the kids get away with more than the adults, and it can become frustrating. You sit down and talk about it after it's over, and that's what the men come up with, is that it teaches them humility.
Participants at the clinics learn how to craft the pieces, as well as the traditional values and reasons for playing the games. Carol Surrett was taking part by breaking apart willow branches outside.
I'm holding little sticks and then breaking them apart. There's like a bundle of, say, 20, and then I break them apart. Counting sticks are to help you with your intuition. So I guess when they used to hunt, they would look at a herd of buffalo, and to see how many buffalo are there, you have to have good intuition for it.
This year, sets of all 60 games will be sent to Fort Belknap Community College and the University of Montana for instructors there to teach the games to more new students. Annual clinics on the Blackfeet Reservation will continue. For National Native News, I'm Daniel Rosinski Larson.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
Support by United Tribes Technical College, offering courses online for a career in medical coding and for updating your current coding certification. Registration available through August 10th online at uttc.edu. Support by Humboldt State University's part-time online Master of Social Work. The 3.5-year program focuses on decolonizing work with rural and indigenous communities. Applications accepted August 1st to 31st for a January start at humboldt.edu/social work.
Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Service.
Welcome back to A Juno Afternoon. This is Katie Bosler filling in for Scott Burton for a couple more weeks here this summer. And with me in the studio is Joyce Vick to tell us about Toastmasters. Welcome to the program, Joyce.
Good afternoon, Katie.
Good to have you here.
Well, thank you. I'm pretty excited to be here also, and especially to talk about Toastmasters, one of my favorite subjects.
Yes, you are a multitasker. You hold a few different offices with the Toastmasters as a whole in Juneau.
I do. Actually, we have three clubs here in Juneau. We have a noon club in the Federal Building on Mondays. We have a Tuesday club at 6:15 out in the Valley. And we also have a noon meeting on Wednesday at the SOB, or the AOB. It's actually the Health and Social Services Building on Wednesday. So, and I belong to all of them just because I like it so much.
Oh, my gosh. So yeah. So the first 3 days of the week, are you have your Toastmasters appointments.
That's pretty much
okay.
It.
And when you say 6:15 on Tuesdays, that's a.m.
That's a.m., yes. That's in the morning.
Oh, my gosh.
Yes, we actually have quite a few dedicated Toastmasters that come to that early meeting.
Yeah, so for those who might not have heard of Toastmasters, what is it?
Well, most people think of Toastmasters as public speaking, and that is part of what Toastmasters is. It gives you an opportunity to stand up in a group of people and speak, prepared speeches. And we also have what we call table topics, which is a table topic master will stand up and ask a question, and you'll have 2 to 3 minutes to talk about the answer to the question. And then we also have evaluations, so you get feedback right away from your speeches.
So how do you think Toastmasters has helped you as a communicator?
Well, I'll tell you what, I can still remember my class that I took in college when I took the speech class, and I waited until the very end to give my speech, and I was so nervous, it sounded like I was going to cry. I felt bad for everybody else in the class. I felt just fine. So it does help quite a bit, but it's not just speaking, it's also listening to what other people say. So I heard someplace where they said that most people listen to reply instead of listen to hear what other people are saying. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the things that Toastmasters help you do.
So, but do you need to go prepared? Like if I was going to go to my first Toastmasters meeting, would I need to bring a prepared speech?
No, you sure wouldn't. We have different roles. At the Toastmaster meeting, we have somebody who has already been assigned as a Toastmaster. We already have somebody who are assigned speakers, assigned evaluators. We have a table topic master and a timer, because timing is very important. We like our meetings to be run efficiently, and we have a limited amount of time. We also have a grammarian and somebody who has a word of the day, which we try to use in our warm-up speeches or our speeches, our evaluations, and table topics. So you wouldn't have to have anything prepared. You could just come and watch what everybody else is doing, and if you felt comfortable, we sure would welcome you.
So how long does a meeting last?
Usually anywhere between 50 minutes and an hour. The Tuesday morning meeting is about an hour. The other ones, we like to make sure that people have time to get to the meeting and then get back to work. So about 50 minutes.
And if you're the Toastmaster, that means you sort of facilitate the meeting? Or
that's correct.
MC it?
That's correct. Mm-hmm. You come up with a theme of the meeting, and everybody else is assigned roles through one of the officers of the Toastmaster Club, and so you don't have to worry about assigning roles for it. And there's also a general evaluator. The general evaluator takes over half of the other half of the meeting of the evaluation portion.
So Toastmasters have been around on an international level.
Correct.
For quite a while.
It's correct. It was actually started in California, and it's been around for quite a while. As a matter of fact, last August, I was lucky enough to go to the international conference in Malaysia, which was very exciting. And this year, they're having it in Las Vegas in August, so that's pretty exciting also.
So yes. At an international conference, I imagine there's lots of different languages being spoken, so different pockets of languages?
Might be surprised that it is international. All of the speeches are done in English for the international competition.
Huh.
And we did belong to YAC, the Yukon-Alaska Council of Toastmasters. We weren't a district. And as of the 1st of July of this year, we went and merged with District 32. So that's very exciting because anybody in Juneau that belonged to a Toastmasters and in good standing could actually win the International Toastmaster Conference, the International Speech Contest.
So District 32, what does that encompass?
Alaska and Western Washington.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so what are the components of an effective speech for a Toastmaster?
For a Toastmaster?
Yes.
Well, the very first book that you get when you join Toastmasters is called A Competent Communicator Book. And in that book, it gives you 10 ideas for speeches, the first one being the icebreaker, and it talks about getting up and saying something so that you can find out what your weaknesses are or what your strengths are, and then you work on those points. You have the other speeches are like body language, because I'm sure that you've seen people on TV and they have habits that they do, and you just wish that somebody would tell them to stop saying or stop playing with their keys, or look at the whole audience and not just the teleprompter or something like that. So there's 10 goals to reach, and then you will get your CC, which is the competent communicator. And then there are advanced speeches. So let's say you want to give speeches for management. There are advanced speeches for that. And, you know, the other thing, too, is that Toastmasters is so reasonable for the value that you get for Toastmasters. So you just can't beat it.
So you pay dues?
Yes, you do.
Mm-hmm.
We do pay dues.
Yeah.
We do pay dues. And basically the dues cover materials that the clubs need to buy. It's the nonprofit, so there's not, you know, they're not outrageous at all. It's usually about $40 to $50 for every 6 months.
So you've been involved now for how long?
Well, actually, I was looking on the Toastmaster International site on my account, and I actually have belonged since December 2007. Yes.
So how do you feel like has it evolved? Does it change as far as each year? Do they have new tips, or they're just sort of basic standards that you always follow? Or?
Well, as a matter of fact, a couple of years ago, they started rebranding Toastmaster Internationals. They came out with a new logo and some new books. They're actually working on, in the next couple of years, they will come out with a new program for working your way up to the DTM, which is the Distinguished Toastmaster. So there's a lot of ways that you can use it. And I've actually seen people come to the Valley Club where they've been going to the university. They have to give a speech in one of their classes. I think the person was giving a speech in her Spanish class. And for that, she came to Toastmasters to practice her speech in Spanish. Nobody knew what she was saying, but, oh boy, it sure looked good.
And this is all memorization, right? So, I mean, you're not reading off a script or notes.
Well, if you do read off a script, I'm sure that your evaluator would say, you know what, you know that speech. You don't really need to read it, and people can tell that you're reading it. So I would suggest that you try and lose the script. Mm-hmm. Notes are not, it's possible to use notes. If you go to the international, they would probably really frown on it because they would expect you to have it memorized. But yeah, notes are allowed to use. Yeah.
And how long is the average speech?
Usually 5 to 7 minutes. For some of the advanced speeches, like facilitating a meeting or something like that, they can run quite a bit longer, anywhere from 15 to 20 minutes, but those are pretty rare, and that would basically take up most of the meeting. Yeah.
Okay.
Usually 5 to 7 minutes.
And I'm curious if Toastmasters has started to require maybe what I call something for the mass ADD generation, like an elevator speech or, you know, give your speech or make your point in 30 seconds or a minute.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, that would be what Table Topics would be great for. Table Topics, great for interviews, great for when somebody's going to ask you a question and you have to come up with an introduction, a couple of points that you want to tell them, and then you would wrap it up with a conclusion again, all in a minute or two. So if you were looking for an elevator speech, something in 30 seconds like that, that would be the perfect opportunity for you to practice that.
Mm-hmm. And it sounds like there's a pretty diverse, about how many members of Toastmasters are in the capital city now, you think?
I think probably around 50 to 60. Yeah. And there's also a club in Ketchikan, too, just in case there's anybody from Ketchikan listening in. They have a club down there, which is a great club. It's also Tuesday morning at 6:45, I believe. Yeah.
So the people who attend, are they, it sounds like all, they're students, professionals?
Yeah, there's a wide variety of people. We have people that come that are right out of high school to people that are retired and they're just looking to stay active in the community. It's kind of interesting because you meet, usually when you're in a job, you know the people that you work with. Well, with Toastmasters, you meet people that you may not actually ever come into contact other than through a Toastmaster meeting. So it kind of opens up your networking ability and your networking skills.
So for those of us who might want to participate in Toastmasters to improve our communication, networking skills, where would we go and when?
Okay. Again? Well, I'm glad you asked me that because on Monday at shortly after 12, their Taku Toastmasters has a meeting. It starts at noon in the Federal Building on the 5th floor. Tuesday morning at 6:15 to 7:15 in the Valley, at the Valley St. Paul's Church. And then the newest club is the Capital Club, and it's Wednesday shortly after noon, like 12:05. And that's in the AOB, the Health and Social Services Building, on the first floor, room 115.
Okay, and is there a website or a phone number?
Yes, you can go. You can either Google Toastmaster International and then look for clubs in Juneau or wherever you happen to be traveling. And you can also, we belong to District 32, so you can Google that also.
All right. Joyce, anything you'd like to add?
No, I just hope to see everyone there. It's a great club, and we just have the best time.
Okay, well, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Katie.
Everybody's talking at me. I don't hear words they're saying, only the echoes of my mind. People stop and stare, I can't see their faces, only the shadows of their eyes. I'm going where the sun keeps shining through the pouring rain, going where the weather suits my clothes, banking off of the northeast winds, sailing on summer breeze, and skipping over the ocean like a stone. I'm going where
the pouring rain. Going where the weather suits my clothes. Banking off of the northeast winds, sailing on summer breeze, and skipping over the ocean like a stone. Everybody's talking at me, can't hear a word they're saying, only the echoes of my mind. I won't let you leave my love behind. No, I won't let you leave.
Welcome back to A Juno Afternoon. This is Katie Bosler, and with me in the studio now is Mac Metcalf, Duff Mitchell, and Bruce Gazaway. They are all retired Alaska National Guard members, and they are here to tell us about the fourth annual Alaska National Guard reunion coming up this Thursday. Welcome, gentlemen.
Thank you, Katie.
Good to have you here. Yeah, so tell us about what you have planned for this Thursday.
Well, we're going to have a dinner, basically, and we're having it at the Jack just across the street from your studio. And everyone who served in the Alaska National or Alaska Air Guard is welcome. And we'll start, the doors will open at 5:30 at the Jack. You can come earlier, and we're also hoping to get some people to help serve. And we last time we had about 120 people, and we expect a similar number this time. And it's a reunion, as you said, where basically people get a chance to, like in any reunion, meet old friends and renew old relationships. And
it sounds like you have like a multi-generational attendance at this event.
Yeah, Katie, we have Guard members in our community and from all over Southeast that served in the territorial days right after World War II, continued, you know, different groups have served in the Vietnam era, and then, you know, Alaska National Guard was on the front line during the Cold War, and so where a lot of National Guards went to summer camps, we went to Arctic winter camps, and so, you know, there's a lot of people that served, and all the way up to the current folks that have, you know, been deployed multiple times to Iraq and Afghanistan, and I think a group just recently came back from Guantanamo. So, you know, we have a lot of veterans in our community as a result of a strong Guard membership.
Right. Yeah. So tell me a little bit about the history of the National Guard here.
It started in 1940, basically. I mean, there's different dates and terms of you know, when someone signed a piece of paper and when they actually started recruiting people was 1940. And Governor Greening went around the streets of Juneau and asked young men to join because the war was beginning to become, it was moving in on Alaska. And so he did that. And when the war started, not long after it started, the National Guard here was broken up and everyone was sent a variety of different places. And older people then served, you know, tried to protect Alaska, especially when Alaska was bombed and the Japanese had invaded part of it. And so you had people who were 40, 50 years old serving to take the place of the young people who had been deployed to Europe and whatnot. But you got people like Governor Egan, who was a National Guard member, and he served throughout the war. And his son, Dennis Egan, was in the National Guard in the early 60s, and he'll be at our reunion. And so you have this history going all the way back to 1940, and Juneau had the first company Company A, Alpha Company, mm-hmm. and that company still exists in Southeast. And you had Ketchikan, you had Fairbanks, and you had Anchorage. All of those had a company. And mm-hmm. so that legacy is mm-hmm. still with us today.
And that was very strong in the villages. The yes. Alaska Territorial Guard, our predecessor, mm-hmm. You had small detachments throughout southeastern Alaska and all along western Alaska, and those folks actually performed a reconnaissance mission looking, you know, at this point we didn't know what the Japanese plans were. The Japanese had invaded the Aleutian Islands, and the ATG was the eyes on the ground for the U.S. military.
So tell me about each of you, your history with the National Guard.
Well, I enlisted here in Juneau. I enlisted slightly older than most people. I was in my 30s when I went in, and I ended up staying until I was 60. And in my time, I've been in both in the Air National Guard and the Army National Guard. I started in the Army National Guard, and I have received excellent training. Matter of fact, the job I do today as a state employee was a job I learned in the Air Guard. Working in environment as an environmental specialist. It's been, for me, a great... I've gotten better vocational training out of the Guard, and I learned more than I ever did in college.
And the National Guard is another job, really, in addition to your regular job, right?
Oh, yes. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, they say it's 1 week in a month, but you do probably more than that. And then
a lot more than that.
And mm-hmm. then, you know, you have a two-week or multiple training periods that you go to. And so mm-hmm. it's a professional occupation for most people.
And tell me a little about your history with the Guard.
Well, I joined the National Guard when I was 17 mm-hmm. As a private, and said I was going to stay in as long as I had fun. And 30 years later, I retired. So, you know, being a poor kid and they give you camping gear and sleeping bags and weapons and stuff like that, it's like, you know, you can get outfitted pretty nicely. And, you know, so I enjoyed it. And I did, like Bruce, I received a lot of education and a lot of training and a lot of other things that have helped me in my career.
And how about you, Mac?
I was drafted for Vietnam, and got out after less than 2 years, and then came back in 87, I think, and I went in 68, so it was like 20-year break, and then stayed in until I turned 60 with the Guard, and I was both weekend warrior, we call it sometimes, and also full-time. And so it was a learning experience. I got to go a lot of different places, don't regret it at all. And Duff was the battalion commander, Lieutenant Colonel Duff Mitchell. Mm-hmm. And when we deployed to Kuwait and with missions to Iraq, and there were 600 people under his command. And so that you know, we've served together from... Mm. pretty much day one for my time in the Guard, mm-hmm. and so those bonds get
old. Yeah, Mac and I served an airborne platoon for Juneau. Or Juneau used to have an airborne platoon many years ago. So.
And those are the kind of bonds that all sorts of people in the Guard have, and it's a chance to do them. We know those.
I'm going to tell a little bit on Mac. Mac's one of the rare, there's several, but it's not very common to have served in Vietnam and then also in Iraq. So
yes.
You got to be in shape to do that. And Mac's retired now, but he's still in good shape.
Definitely. Yeah, so now, do they kick you out when you're 60?
Pretty much.
you can get waivers. Harry James, one of our pilots, a Vietnam pilot, was in the air in our Army Aviation, and he was one of the oldest pilots in the system, and he was able to show that, you know, he was mentally and physically fit, and they'd extend him another year and allow him to serve. So he was one of the oldest pilots in the system.
But by and large, the military is a young person's game.
Yeah. Okay. And now Company C, is that based now out at the Joint Use Facility with UAS?
I don't think that's out there. I think it would be maybe Alpha, possibly Bravo.
I don't know the unit designation, but there is a unit that drills. You know, there's an MP unit, and there's some support folks that, that drill out at the UAS joint facility.
But when we deployed to Kuwait and Iraq, it was Alpha Company.
Yes.
And we had all four companies in that deployment that, you know, originally started in 1940.
Okay. So we have lots of sponsors for your event coming up here on Thursday at 5:30 at the Jack.
Yeah, program starts at 5:30, and we have a lot of sponsors, you know, local veterans supporting sponsors. You know, we have Alaska Airlines, Alaska Marine Lines, First Bank, Sea Alaska, Juno Hydropower, Alaskan Brewing Company. We have Hecla, Greens Creek Mine, Gold Belt, NC Machinery, Core Alaska. We have Kutznawu, the local VFW, and the Filipino Hall. And then our sponsor that really helps us organize everything is the American Legion Post 25.
And is there a speaker? What is the format? Is it just?
It will be a fairly informal structure, but we do have some guests. Lieutenant Governor Malott will be visiting. Also, will be visited by Brigadier General Hummel, who is our recently appointed Adjutant General. She'll be flying down to join us, and I think Senator Deegan will be joining us, as will Mayor Sanford and some other people, many of whom have been members in the past. Some are just well-wishers.
Okay, sounds good. And are you all cooking the dinner?
Well, we're all helping.
They're all pointing to you, Doug.
Well, we do have some pretty good food, so we ask people and bring they can bring their families too. It's a reunion, and there'll be some family and kids events there too. So
okay, so any current, past, or present? Well, I guess anyway, if you have any affiliation with the National Guard, show up 5:30 at the Jack on Thursday the 30th for a reunion.
And you can actually show up at 4:30 and we'll let you in.
Okay.
And put your work.
All right.
Thanks, Katie.
Well, Duff Mitchell, Bruce Gasaway, and Matt Metcalf, thank you so much for coming in and telling us about the 4th Annual Alaska National Guard Reunion.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks. Have a good one.
Here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday, the 28th of July, 2015. It's the birthday of the poet John Ashbery, born in Rochester, New York, 1927, grew up on his family's fruit farm near Lake Ontario, went to a small rural school. He was a bright young man and a generous neighbor, seeing that, paid to send him to a good school for his last 2 years of high school, and he started writing poetry. Went on to Harvard, published his first book when he was 29, a book entitled Some Trees. John Ashbery, who said, "I don't quite understand about understanding poetry. I experience poems with pleasure, whether I understand them or not. I'm not quite sure. I don't want to read something I already know, or which is going to slide down easily. There has to be some crunch, a certain amount of resilience." John Ashbery, who wrote in his poem At North Farm, "Somewhere someone is traveling furiously toward you, at incredible speed, traveling day and night, through blizzards and desert heat, across torrents, through narrow passes. But will he know where to find you, recognize you when he sees you, give you the thing he has for you?" It's the birthday of the poet Gerard Manley Hopkins, born in Stratford near London, 1844, went to a fancy boarding school, wrote poems, he was a painter, went on to Oxford to study the classics. And while he was there, he had a religious conversion. His parents were Anglicans, but the young Hopkins decided to become a Catholic, inspired by John Henry Newman,
whose book Apologia Pro Vita Sua was a bestseller while Hopkins was at Oxford. 2 years later, Hopkins decided to become a Jesuit priest, and he began his training. He burned all of his poems, said he was giving up poetry, didn't write at all for 7 years until 1875, when a German passenger ship, the SS Deutschland, sank in a storm. 75 passengers died, including 5 Franciscan nuns who were escaping harsh anti-Catholic laws. And he wrote a long poem, The Wreck of the Deutschland. And now that he saw poetry as a way to express his faith, he started writing again. In the year he was ordained as a priest, 1877, he wrote some of his best-known poems, including The Windhover, As Kingfishers Catch Fire, Dragonflies Draw Flame. And he wrote God's Grandeur, the famous poem that begins, The world is charged with the grandeur of God. He went through desperate hard times as a priest, was sent to Dublin, which he hated. He became very depressed, doubted his own religious faith, even contemplated suicide, died of typhoid fever at the age of 44. During his lifetime, he had published only a handful of poems. Here's a poem for today by Emily Dickinson, The Props Assist the House. The props assist the house until the house is built, and then the props withdraw, and adequate, erect, the house support itself and cease to recollect the auger and the carpenter. Just such a retrospect hath the perfected life, a past of plank and nail and slowness, then the scaffolds drop, affirming it a soul. Emily Dickinson's poem, The Props Assist the House. That's the Writer's Almanac, supported by Lumosity.com, personalized brain training developed by neuroscientists to challenge memory and problem-solving through online games, Lumosity.com. Produced by Joy Biles, assisted by Teresa Burgess. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Well, that's what you're doing right here, keeping in touch on a Juno afternoon. This is Katie Bosler, and with me in the studio are artists Sharon Lobaugh and Kelly Barkov. They're here to talk about their show of art for First Friday at the Rookery. Now, First Friday is a week from this Friday. It's August 7th.
That's right.
And thank you both for coming in. Tell me about your joint exhibit.
Well, it was kind of an accident. Mm-hmm. I understand Travis Smith was looking for an artist to show for a couple of months, and we both applied at the same time, and he was having a little trouble deciding, you know, what to do, and I looked at her work, and I thought, well, we ought to be able to work together. So we're pitching it as a sourdough and chichaco event, because I've been here for a long, long time, and she's recently moved here.
Okay. And but Kelly, you are an Alaskan.
I am Alaskan born and raised. Mm-hmm. I've grew up in the Anchorage area, and I've been in Juneau for about 3 years.
Does your art contrast? Is it very different, your styles?
It's somewhat similar because we both use Alaskan themes, and just different techniques. And
mm-hmm. So tell me, Sharon, about your recent work. What you have it?
Well, this year I've been so inspired by the Northern Lights. They've been dramatic here in Juneau when we often have so much rain we don't always see them in the winter or something. Mm-hmm. So I was inspired by a lot of the images I saw on Facebook, and myself one night I just got up in the middle of the night and I thought, they're there, and I ran out to the glacier and got out of my car and just loved it. It was so much fun.
No, I love that, being inspired by Facebook, because it's amazing how much you learn what you're not seeing from Facebook, right? Especially Northern Lights.
Oh, yeah. I missed them again, you know, or something. It's really exciting.
Yeah.
There's been some wonderful photography Mm-hmm. But this year, one of the exciting things for me is that they were framed especially to match the image. Mm. And my framer has been Tony Pope for a number of years, and he's done a very different job this year by taking the colors that are in the picture and using the mounting them on a surface and repeating the color scheme in a frame, and so it's a third dimension kind of thing. It's different.
That sounds just lovely.
Very interesting. Mm,
yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, how about you, Kelly? Tell me about your artwork.
My artwork is, I paint in acrylic, so I use the acrylic medium to bring out really bold colors that you see in Alaska, sunsets, sunrise, northern lights, and I've been working, since I've been here in Juneau for 3 years, on southeast landscape and ocean, and a couple I have with animals and people within the southeast. So since I've been in Juneau, I've been really inspired by everything around me, and that has pushed forward the motivation to get back into the art scene here in the southeast.
Yeah, tell me about that, about being motivated by what's around you.
Well, growing up in Alaska, we're all pretty lucky to have the experience to see wildlife and mountains. But coming down here, really not having any family or any connection to Juneau, I came down here lonely, but I felt so welcomed and wholesome by the nature and getting out on the water with the sailing club that's here. And I just feel really proud of being here, and it made me want to display it in the way I know how.
Well, I really feel like I want to see this show. So,
well, I hope you do.
This is opening for a month.
Well, right? Actually, yeah, we put it up last month, but didn't quite make it into the publicity. So we're having the opening this month.
Mm-hmm.
But because the Rookery is a cafe, they don't have a general reception like many of the galleries do. And we're going to do something different. We're going to both be there because if people come in to see the show, we want to meet them. And if they buy something, we'll even treat them to a special hors d'oeuvre and a drink.
That's right.
Oh, my gosh. So
yeah.
That sounds like a real extension of the meet and greet.
Well, I think so. It might be. It might be worthwhile.
So what time is this on Friday, August 7th?
4:30 to how long are we going to be there? Till about 8?
About 8 o'clock. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. So come and see the art. And I guess people could actually do a preview, couldn't they, if they're interested?
Well, sure. Yeah. It's up now. So, and you might want one of the images I've done this year, which is the a king crab selfie. So you'll see, it's probably everybody's favorite. It's, you know, one of those really old ones that you very seldom get with the crusty edges and a little bit of green stuff growing on top. So you might enjoy that.
This is as if a king crab took a selfie of him or herself.
Yeah.
Okay. What a concept.
Yeah. It must have been a 25-year-old.
And how did you come up with that?
Well, I've painted king crab before, and I was just looking at the photos from the previous image, and I saw this one, and I thought, boy, he sure is a crusty old guy. So I just wanted to do it. So it's really kind of an interesting one.
And Kelly, do you have an image that you're particularly excited about?
My favorite images are generally not the favorite of the masses. Most people who have seen the show, the response that I've gotten is my backcountry skier. People seem to really like watching him plow down the mountain like many people do over in the Juneau ski resort. And a lot of people can put themselves in that situation. So I think it makes a connection with a lot of locals.
Especially this year.
Yeah, right.
And we didn't have a whole lot of a ski season.
People are missing that, feeling nostalgic. But my favorite, personally, are the campers that I have. It's called Alaska Camping, and it's closest to the front register of the store on the left-hand side. It's dark scene. People are sitting around a campfire, but for some reason, it connects with me on a deeper level. So.
Well, Kelly Barkov and Sharon Loba, is there anything you'd like to add about your upcoming a meet and greet at the Rookery on first Friday for August.
Well, no, just encourage people to attend. I think the Arts Council does a great job of making sure everybody's aware of these events, and it's grown over the past several years, and from I think it's only been offered about 3 or 4 years, and now it's really quite a big event every first Friday, so I hope you all come out.
Okay, so
I think we'd also like to thank Travis for letting us have our meet and greet at the Rookery, since it is a place where people are coming in and out, and he's looking for his tables to be turning over. It's nice that we have a standing reservation with him in the window seat, so people can come in and chat with us.
All right, well, sounds great. So again, folks, that's 4:30 to about 8 on first Friday at the Rookery. If you want to get a preview of this artwork of Sharon Loba and Kelly Barkov, you can stop by the Rookery and check it out. Thanks so much for coming in, ladies.
Thanks for having us.
Here's some music featured at the Southeast Alaska State Fair coming up this weekend. Welcome back to A Juno Afternoon. This is Katie Bosler filling in for Scott Burton for another couple weeks here. And with me in the studio is our program manager for 360 North, Kelly Birkinshaw. Hello,
hi,
Kelly.
How are you?
Great. How are you?
I'm doing well.
You're here to tell us about some upcoming programming, especially for tonight.
Yeah. And we have Ellen Frankenstein.
Yes, we do. Right here. Ellen, are you with us?
I'm here in Sitka, where it's drizzling.
Okay. It's kind of a variation of drizzle in Juneau. Actually, it's numerous showers are in the forecast with the lows around 51. So Southeast Alaskan weather for sure.
Gotta love it.
Yes, yes. Yep. So, Ellen, you are the producer of Carved from the Heart, which will be showing tonight on 360 North.
Yep, at 8 o'clock. And I produced it with Luis Brady. He was a lifelong Sitkin. And it's like, it's a few years old, maybe like 20 years old.
Yeah, it's been around for a while, huh?
Well, this was an official selection at the Sundance Film Festival and the American Indian Film Festival. And this is about a totem carver who recently passed on.
Yes, Stan Marson, who is a Simpson carver, his son died of a cocaine overdose, and in his grief, he decided to create a totem pole, which became known as the Healing Heart Totem Pole, and this committee formed, and they helped him organize it. And Louise Brady, who was working with the tribe and was a counselor, and pulled me in to make this film about it, and it was a film we made in collaboration with the community. And had to make a lot of tough choices to kind of talk about hard issues around the story of the pole being created and raised. And so we bring up all sorts of things like post-traumatic stress and domestic violence and substance abuse and suicide. And the awesome thing about the film and what I like to do with films like this is we worked hard to make it not just the end of the story, but something that would open dialogue and allow people to talk about what was next.
Mm.
So the film ended up showing like a really well-organized suicide prevention workshop at Barrow. In Cake, they created their own Healing Heart Council. They created community projects. And we went on all around the state and did these screenings and encouraged different people in the film to go out with the film. And we also, I went to a jail in San Francisco with the film. And the Hospice Foundation used it. Mothers Against Drunk Driving used it. So it was a really amazing. And it's still being used in a lot of substance abuse programs and teaching. And and also I think that teachers in Alaska actually watch it as part of their kind of cultural competency training.
So it's really become quite a tool, it sounds like, for working and healing. Over these past two decades.
Yeah. And my big takeaway is healing doesn't end. You know, that you're not, when you decide to stop drinking or you're dealing with a loss in your family. And there's a woman in the film who shares losing a baby after several days, after being born. And that healing is such a process. And so the outreach on this film was amazing.
A lifelong process.
Yeah, yeah. Really wild and great.
So
I got to yeah.
Oh, no, go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
So again, it's showing at 8 o'clock tonight on 360 North.
Yes, and for more information about the film, Ellen, you had
right now that you can go to artchangeinc.org and read about it, and you also can go to New Day Films.
New Day
and
Films.
New Day Films.
New Day
Films.
Film. Okay.
Yeah, New Day. And we still encourage it's going to be screening tonight. And I love collaborating with 360 North and K2O and Coast Alaska. But we encourage people to use the film in community settings. So contact us. But tune in tonight. It's going to be streaming and as well as being broadcast.
Yes.
Right?
Okay.
It's always streaming on 360north.org.
That's really a good reminder, Kelly, that if you don't have a television, you can always watch this online.
Yeah.
And you have some other programming coming up on 360 North?
Yeah, there's some good stuff coming up. So following the show tonight at 8 is Climate Change at 9, Climate Change, a Global Reality. And it's a moderator, John King from CNN, is speaking with some panelists and the relationship between climate change and human activities and resulting in things like what we're seeing with sea levels rising, temperatures rising, ongoing multi-year drought. And so he's speaking with his panelists mostly about public policy initiatives that can be done around that. Then coming up on Friday is a fun one, Chasing Dinosaurs Across Alaska, which was produced by our partners, Alaska Public Media in Anchorage. And he went to Denali to to speak with one of the researchers there. We have a lot of people think of Denali National Park, beautiful scenery, glaciers, but they're not necessarily thinking about megafauna and the fact that we have nearly 70 million years of fossils and history of dinosaurs. So this is called Chasing Dino Across Alaska.
Okay.
So we learn about Dino. And then another older movie that's playing again on next Tuesday night at 8 is a good one, For the Rights of All, Ending Jim Crow in Alaska. And talks about Alaska Native challenges with the
civil rights
for Alaska Natives. So.
Yeah, so much diverse and important programming on 360 North. And it's good to be reminded of this from our program manager, Kelly Birkinshaw, producer, filmmaker, Ellen Frankenstein, on the line with us here from Sitka. And we will be re-showing the now about 20-year-old film, Carved from the Heart, and somewhat inspired by the passing of the key character of this movie. You know, Ellen, you've done you have quite a body of work. What is it about this work that you've told us, of course, about how this is recommended now as a resource for psychology and social work and cultural awareness, teacher training, restorative justice, all kinds of important initiatives. But for you as a filmmaker, what did this mean to you?
Oh, again, as I said, the incredible power of community to support and bring us together. And the incredible resources we have in this state with the, you know, Alaska Native traditions and culture and cultural bearers. And Stan was brave. He started something that people weren't doing at that time, using, you know, a traditional art form, breaking kind of some protocol, which I'm no expert to talk about. But he kind of broke some protocol in to involve non-natives and do things kind of out of the clan system. And I think that really triggered a lot of other work like that. And I often think of the work of documentary filmmaking is about kind of rearranging the furniture and rearranging things so we can see all the amazing things that are there or what we need to look at. So this project was totally collaborative and very informed by the people involved in it. It wasn't easy. There was a lot of hard decisions in the, you know, deciding how to do this project. And it was just an amazing process. And it's an honor to keep showing it, and every time it's shared, I feel like Stan, you know, even though he's passed, he's with us.
Well, thank you so much, Ellen, for joining us on the line today to talk about your film, Carved from the Heart, that will be showing tonight, 8 o'clock on 360 North. That is channel 18 on your GCI cable, I believe. Yes. And it's also at 360north.org on your laptop screen, or even your phone.
Yeah. Go mobile.
Wow. Yep.
All right. Anything either of you would like to add?
No, I'm looking forward to coming over in a few weeks and getting another film, Tracing Roots. It was made within about Dolores Churchill, finished. So I'll be over in on your feet soon, so to speak.
Okay. We'll look forward to having you back in town, Ellen.
Okay. Take it easy, and thanks for sharing the work. Okay.
Thank
bye.
You. Bye.
Bye-bye.
All right. Well, thank you, Kelly.
Thank you. Really appreciate it, Katie.
Okay. Get back to the office now, right?
Get back to work.
Okay. Thanks for listening, everybody. This is music that will be featured at the Southeast Alaska State Fair. This is performer David Correa with New Moon.
This is KTOO Juno. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juno and Douglas. We also rebroadcast on translators K276AF in the Mendenhall Valley and Auk Bay, K269AO in Lemon and Schweitzer Creeks, K210 AM in Gustavus, K220BT in Hoonah, and K210 AS in Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait. In Juneau, KTOO is on GCI Cable on digital channel 871. We're also online at ktoo.org. Support for national programming on KTOO comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and listeners like you.